Persigo Press presents the Henry Rios Mysteries podcast. Hello, this is Michael Nava, author of a series of crime novels featuring Henry Rios, a gay Mexican-American criminal defense lawyer, and the producer of this podcast. Today we present Lay Your Sleeping Head, the first novel in the series. Lay Your Sleeping Head opens in the summer of 1982 in the fictional town of Linden, California, 30 miles south of San Francisco. Linden is the home of the prestigious university of the same name, founded in the 19th century by railroad tycoon Grover Linden. Henry Rios is a public defender, born and raised in a small town in California's Central Valley and from a working-class Mexican-American family. He is a graduate of Linden University and its top-ranked law school. In 1982, there is no internet. People smoke in bars and on airplanes. Most gay men are closeted, and no one has heard of AIDS. It's an America where 83% of the people identify as white, 85% as Christian, and 83% say that homosexuality is morally wrong. Ronald Wilson Reagan, who once declared that trees cause more pollution than automobiles, is the president of the United States. In this episode, more loose ends and possible motives seem to confirm Rios' belief that Hugh's death was not an accident.
Can you tell what's missing?
Documents I took from Hugh's house after he died.
What kind of documents?
They were about the car crash that killed his grandmother and his uncle Jeremy.
You asked me that last night, if he mentioned that to me.
And you said no. Wait, did he?
No, but...
But what?
What was in those documents?
Hugh said they proved his grandfather was behind the accident. What? He did say something to you about it, didn't he?
No, really. He didn't, but... I assume you know Hugh's great-great-grandfather was Grover Linden.
Yes? So?
When I was a kid, I'd hear people say the Lindens are cursed. So, anytime anything bad happens to one of them, there's a lot of gossip. It started with the son.
Whose son?
Grover Jr. His dad founded the university as a memorial to him after he died when he was 16. The official story is that Junior drowned while swimming in Lake Como in Italy on his grand tour of Europe. But he died in January. No one goes swimming in Lake Como in January. The story I heard is that little Grover escaped from the asylum where he was being treated for what they called dementia praecox back then and dove into the lake to get away from his keepers. And died of exposure.
Dementia praecox? I've never heard of it.
It's called schizophrenia nowadays.
Like what Hugh's father has. So, there's a family history of mental illness. No wonder Hugh was afraid he might be susceptible. What does 100-year-old gossip have to do with Hugh's claim that his grandfather's a murderer?
Well, as I said... Anytime a Linden encounters a misfortune, people talk. So, there was a lot of chatter when Christina and Jeremy Paris died in that crash. Not that anyone said the judge was responsible. I mean, how could he have been? He was at their home in Linden when it happened. Still, everyone knew it was a bad marriage. And there'd been talk of divorce. And then, fortuitously... Christina Paris was killed along with the one son who wasn't crazy, leaving the judge in charge of the trust.
The family trust?
No. I mean the Linden University trust. The judge and his brother-in-law, John Smith, Hugh's great uncle, are the sole trustees.
There are only two trustees? isn't that unusual for a charitable trust as big as the university trust?
That was apparently old Grover's way of controlling the purse strings from the grave. Two trustees, and they have to be family members. Christina Paris was the other trustee before she died, and then afterwards, there wasn't anyone left but Hugh, who was a minor, his dad, who was insane, and the judge.
So he did well by his wife's death.
That's what raised eyebrows. Now, these documents, did you go through them? Did they prove Hugh's allegations?
The only suspicious thing was a statement by a witness who claimed the Paris car had been hit by another car just before it went off the road. But that hardly proves murder, and the witness had been drinking, so the cops didn't think it was worth following up.
So it was an accident.
I was pretty sure until last night. But look around you.
What do you mean?
Isn't it obvious? Someone followed me to your place, waited until I came out, abducted me, and shot me up with sodium pentothal, probably to find out what I knew about Hugh's allegations against the judge. I must have told him about the documents, so they came here and took them.
But if the documents didn't prove anything...
Whoever took them wouldn't have known that without reading them. They obviously thought Hugh had something that incriminated the judge. The question is, what? There must be something in those papers that I missed. Otherwise, Hugh wouldn't have been murdered.
You really believe he was murdered?
Do you think all of this is a coincidence? Hugh's death, the mugging, the break-in?
I don't know what to think. Look, Henry, I disliked the judge before I knew what he did to Hugh, and now I think he's despicable, beyond despicable. I feel bad about Hugh, and I feel guilty about how easily I assumed the worst about him. Even after he tried to make things right between us. But murder? Muggings? Burglaries? He's a retired federal judge, not some criminal mastermind.
He raped his 10-year-old grandson. Repeatedly. And then watched him self-destruct. Someone who would do that is capable of anything. Hey, this isn't your problem, and I didn't mean to drag you into it. Thanks for helping me out last night.
You're giving me the brush off.
I'm giving you a way out.
Well, maybe I don't want a way out.
You just said you don't think the judge is implicated in all this.
No. What I said is I don't know what to think. About the judge, I mean. I'm not sure. But I know his crowd. My family's part of it, and I have access to people in it. I'm willing to try to find out what I can from them.
What people?
Well, John Smith, for one.
You're going to ask John Smith if his brother-in-law had Hugh killed because he was going to expose the judge as a murderer?
No. I'm going to find out if he thinks there was anything suspicious about Hugh's death. What about it? You want my help?
Yes. Thank you, Grant. I should clean up this mess.
Let me give you a hand. This textbook was near the door. Howard on Trusts and Estates. You kept this from law school?
Nah. I sold mine when I graduated. I found this copy at Hugh's house. It was with the Wills.
Whose Wills?
His grandmother's and his Uncle Jeremy's.
There's a highlighted passage here. Did Hugh have any particular interest in the doctrine of simultaneous death?
Not that I know of. He must have bought the book used. I'm hungry. Buy you lunch?
I need to show my face at the office. Will you keep in touch?
Yes, of course.
Hugh's lucky to have met you.
At the time, it just seemed like a random encounter, but it changed my life.
You never know when that's going to happen. Or with who. Goodbye, Henry.
Goodbye, Grant.
Henry, it's Terry. Meet me tomorrow morning at the coffee shop where we met last time. I have some information.
Ooh, you're looking a little rough.
I'll tell you about it, but first, what have you got?
I managed to get a copy of the autopsy report and a couple photos of the body. Are you okay to look at these?
Yeah. Anything out of sync?
Well, see for yourself. Bruises on the chest.
Oh. I don't remember seeing these when I identified him.
Neither did the coroner when he first examined the body. These developed later as his body began to decompose. That's rare, but it sometimes happens. Take a look at his wrists.
Looks like rope burns.
Yeah, to me too. These aren't the kind of injuries you associate with death by overdose.
What did the coroner say?
He tried to tell me the bruises on Hugh's chest were from the paramedics' attempt to revive him. But I was there when they arrived. He was already dead. They didn't try to revive him.
And the rope burns?
Yeah, he said because Hugh was gay, he was probably into some kind of rough play.
Jesus.
Yeah, there's something else. Hugh was a long-time junkie, right?
He was clean.
Okay, I'm not arguing with you, but take a look at the bruising around the injection site. It was a very sloppy job of shooting up.
Oh, yeah. You're right. He would have known exactly what to do. He was attacked, wasn't he? Attacked and tied up and driven to campus where someone gave him a hot shot.
Yeah, I admit it's looking less and less like an accidental overdose.
But how did they get at him in the first place?
I've thought about that. Remember the busted taillight? He could have been rear-ended that night. What's the first thing you do when you're in a minor traffic accident?
Of course. You pull off the road to exchange information.
Yeah.
That's how the killer got him out of his car.
And caught him completely off guard. I think there were two of them. One to subdue Hugh and drive him to campus, and the other to follow in the getaway car. The tox screen came back, straight heroin. The coroner's sticking to accidental overdose.
How does that explain the other evidence?
To quote him, unrelated, coincidental, insignificant.
He has to be part of the cover-up.
Yeah, let's not get carried away. I know Bud Flanders. He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but he's not corrupt. I think he was just pissed off at me for questioning his work. Anyway, I know you think Hugh's grandfather is behind his death, but even if the physical evidence points to murder, none of it points to the judge.
Except that staged car accident seemed to be his M.O.
I'm not following you.
When I told you that Hugh accused his grandfather of molesting him, I left something out.
You did what?
I didn't tell you everything that was going on between him and his grandfather. I'm sorry, but you'll understand why when I explain. It's kind of an incredible story.
You told me you didn't play games.
I know. Hear me out. How much do you know about the Linden family tree?
Only what you're about to tell me.
Hand me a napkin. I'll draw it for you. We start with Grover Linden, 19th century robber baron. He and his wife have two children, a son, Grover Jr., and a daughter, Sarah. Grover died when he was 16, and his father built the university as a memorial to his son.
Yeah, that part I knew.
Bear with me. Old Grover founds the university and steals a bunch of professors from the Ivy League schools by offering them huge salaries. One of them is a guy named Jeremiah Smith, who becomes the university's first president. He also marries Grover's daughter, Sarah. They also have a boy and a girl, John Smith, the guy Hugh called his Uncle John, and Christina, Hugh's grandmother. John never marries, but Christina married Robert Paris.
The judge.
Right. Robert Paris married into the Linden family fortune when he married Christina. She's the one with the money and the status. They had two sons, Nick, Hugh's father, and Jeremy, Hugh's uncle. Hugh was the only grandchild, the last direct descendant of Grover Linden.
What happened to the other son, Jeremy?
He and his mother were killed in a car accident on their way to Reno, where Christina was going to file for a quickie divorce from Judge Paris.
I assume this is leading up to something relevant to Hugh's death?
Hugh told me that Judge Paris was behind the accident that killed his wife and son to prevent the divorce and retain control of the Linden fortune.
Yeah, you're right. That is incredible. Did you believe him?
He said he had evidence connecting the judge to the death of his wife and son. Some documents he kept at his house in the city. After he died, I went back to his place and took the papers. 2 nights ago, I was abducted and drugged in the city, and when I got back to my apartment, it had been broken into and the papers were gone.
Whoa, let me get this straight. Hugh said he had evidence his grandfather murdered his wife and son? After Hugh died, you broke into his house and took that evidence?
I didn't break in. He gave me a key.
Whatever. You took the documents and then someone broke into your place and stole them? Now, what does that have to do with you being grabbed and drugged?
I was injected with sodium pentothal. You know, truth serum. That's how they must have found out about the papers I took from Hugh's place.
I can see why you waited to tell me until I knew you better. If you told me when we first talked, I would have thought you were a conspiracy nut. And I'm not convinced you aren't. Okay, this evidence of Hugh's, did you look at it?
Yeah.
And?
It was inconclusive. A witness said he saw another driver force the Parises off the road, but the cops thought he was drunk and didn't follow up.
And that's it.
Someone went to a lot of trouble to get the documents back. Whoever did it must have been worried they implicated the judge in the accident. And that's why they killed Hugh.
You told me he was killed to keep him from exposing his grandfather as a pedophile.
Like you said, the statute of limitations on those crimes has expired. There would have been a scandal, but not a criminal prosecution. There's no statute of limitations on murder, and murder for financial gain is a death penalty offense. There's the real motive for killing Hugh.
If any of this is true, all you got is Hugh's story and no corroboration.
But the story makes sense. Robert Paris arranges a car accident that kills his wife and son, his only competent son, because Hugh's father is insane, preventing her from divorcing him and allowing him to keep control of the Linden fortune. His grandson, Hugh, finds out what he did and gathers the proof that could put the judge on death row. Then Hugh is abducted in yet another staged car crash and also killed in a way that looks like an accident. Who benefits? Who stands to gain the most from Hugh's death?
This is way beyond my pay grade.
Are you bailing on me?
Did I say that? Look, I don't know if the judge killed his wife and son, but even if he did, that trail is cold. We need to focus on Hugh's murder, where there's still a chance of putting together a case for homicide before the evidence disappears.
But what about a motive for Hugh's murder?
You're the lawyer. You know motive isn't an element of murder.
Not a legal element. But I've never tried a murder case where the prosecutor didn't feel obligated to prove a motive. Otherwise, it's like telling a story and leaving out the most important part of the plot. The jury will want to know why Hugh was killed, and that leads back to the accident that killed his grandmother and uncle.
Yeah, one step at a time, Henry. We need to get the investigation into Hugh's death reopened. That's not going to happen if the coroner sticks to his finding of accidental death. He's not going to change it to homicide, not with what we've got. But he could revise it to undetermined. Even that would be enough to get the department back on the case.
You said the coroner blew you off when you challenged him.
He did, but that's because, from his perspective, I'm just another annoying cop who needs him more than he needs me. Now, if someone from the Linden family were to pressure him, he might be persuaded to take another look at the body. And if he didn't, they could request an independent autopsy. What about this Uncle John? Would he help?
I don't know. But I have a friend who knows him and is filling him out. Hugh's mother is teaching at the university this quarter. I could approach her. What are you going to do?
I have a friend, too, an ornery assistant DA who isn't part of the old boys network that lets the university write its own rules when it comes to crimes on campus. If the campus police are hiding anything about Hugh's death, she'll get it out of them. Do you remember any details of the accident that killed the grandma and uncle?
I dictated some notes. The burglars missed my voice recorder. I thought you said you weren't going to focus on that.
Yeah, but now I'm curious.
I'll get my notes to you.
Who was the investigating agency?
CHP.
Oh, my cousin's a captain there. Well, I guess I don't need to tell you to be careful.
You think I'm in danger?
If Hugh's right about who killed his relatives, and you're right about who killed Hugh, then yeah. If I were you, I'd sleep with one eye open.
You've been listening to Lay Your Sleeping Head, a Henry Rios mystery. If you enjoyed this podcast, please spread the word on social media. We depend upon your support to keep this series going. For updates and behind-the-scenes extras, visit us at our Facebook page, The Henry Rios Mysteries, or at michaelnavawriter.com under the podcast tab. We'd also love to hear from you. Message us on Facebook or email us at persigopress@gmail.com. That's persigopress@gmail.com. This is an abridged version of the novel, Lay Your Sleeping Head. You can buy the complete novel at Amazon. For this episode, our cast was Armando Rey as Henry Rios, Douglas Georgas as Grant Hancock, and Scarlett Hepworth as Detective Terry Orms. Our director is Russell Kaltschmidt. Our sound engineer is Dave Peck. Music and sound effects were composed by Josh DeRosa. This episode was written and produced by Michael Nava. Thank you for listening.